Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Mining Maimonides. It's good to see you all as we sort of just ended the Hanukkah holiday. It's nice to continue the rest of this dark, cold winter with a little bit of Torah together. So I'd like to do a bit of a review of sort of the works of the Rambam and what we've done so far. We started off by talking about a bit of a biography about the Rambam. And if you remember, during those classes, we discussed a few different works that the Rambam wrote. The main works that we're going to focus on is the first of which is called the Introduction to the Mishnah, the Perush HaMishnayot, that the Rambam wrote in his youth. A pretty impressive work for someone of that age, I must say so myself, but that is the first of the Rambam works. Next work that he wrote was the Sefer HaMitzvot, which is a list of all the commandments. The third work that the Rambam wrote, which is probably the most impactful, is called the Yad HaChazakah. The Yad HaChazakah is the all-inclusive, comprehensive work on all of Jewish living, all of halakha, whether relevant in today's day and age, whether what was relevant in the past, what will be relevant in the future. It's a very long work, which the Rambam told us, if you remember, that you need only read Tanakh and that book, and you're taken care of. And lastly, and maybe most controversially, the Rambam wrote the book that we refer to as Moreh HaNevuchim, the Guide for the Perplexed. And we began studying the introduction to the Perush HaMishnayot. The last time we talked about the Rambam's take on the purpose of all of creation, the purpose of humanity. We explored a few ramifications of the Rambam's viewpoint. And today I want to begin to learn with you a part of the Perush HaMishnah itself. And it's an introduction to the tractate of Pirkei Avot. You may be familiar with what we call Pirkei Avot, chapters of the forefathers. And I'd like to hear what you think. A brief summary. If I were to ask you, what does chapters of the forefathers focus on? What is the general topic at hand? What does Pirkei Avot talk about? Do I want to volunteer an answer? I'm not looking for anything too complicated.
I would say Diamond.
Say again, Alan? I don't know if I heard what you said. I'm sorry. Try one more time.
Zaya Mensch, to be a person.
Oh, you're saying Yiddish. Sorry, excuse me. Okay, to be a person, how to be a mensch. Okay, that's fair.
Right living.
Right living. Perfect. So Pirkei Avot is what it seems to be more of an ethical work. It's not focused on halakhic guidance like most of the Mishnah is. It doesn't tell us how to keep anything. It's a lot of it has to do with Talmud Torah, but it's also very much focused on ethical teachings and, you know, sort of the popular statements from the rabbis of the time of the Mishnah and even earlier. And the Rambam has an introduction to Pirkei Avot called Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters. And in it, he introduces a lot of very important concepts that he feels are very important into understanding what it means to be an ethical person. And I think it's a nice next step to take in trying to get a feel for the Rambam's thoughts. So what we're going to do, very basically, I'd like to read through it all with you. I'd like to read through what we call Shmona Prakim, which are these eight introductory chapters to Pirkei Avot. And there's no source sheet. We're just going to read through it. We're going to learn it together. And I think that it will be a very fruitful exercise. So at this point, I'm going to share my screen. You should. This is accessible if you have access to Safari. I think it's a nice presentation. There's a translation. It should be accessible. And we're going to begin from his introduction. I don't want to spend too much time on the introduction, but there is something very significant that the Rambam tells us at the end of his introduction, which I want to focus on for a bit. So Rambam writes here as follows, and I'll begin reading, and I would love it if someone else wants to continue either reading in Hebrew or English. That would be wonderful. So the Rambam says as follows, Hinebi'an rebu b'sichat zeh chibor, he says, I explain to you in the introduction what this is doing here. Why this is included in the Mishnah. Because you could have said, I don't need the rabbis to tell me, basic ethical teachings. I can intuit how to be an ethical person by myself. And the Rambam says, no, that's not true. There is a lot necessity to having a track day dedicated not toward teaching you what you can and cannot do on Shabbat, or, you know, the way that you have to pray to God and what blessings to recite, but how to be a good ethical person. The rabbis have what to contribute in that regard as well. He said, the Zagar new Gomkin robed Hoela Bazon Masafta. I also told you the great advantage, the reason of that this track was written. V'anu pamarabu b'mashakona mizah achibu l'dabar b'zon masata b'nyanim mo'ilin. We promised many times to discuss certain very important points that about when we comment upon it. L'har v'ksar arichav nishik afal pisha tira mivoere kala l'havin l'asor masha b'chlala eno kala kov ne'adam. Number one, although the contents seem very easy to understand, and you're going to read this and you're going to think, oh, this is very basic, it's not simple for everyone, and number one. And number two, the inkol in Yanela Gankin Mubanim Mabli Tirisharo. It's not really all so simple. Some of the things you'll find in this tractate actually require a great explanation. And not only that, it brings you to great perfection and true success. So the Rambam here is justifying why you should devote your time to studying this Masechet. Don't just shrug it off and say, I know this is basic. I know things that are basic is being honesty or being wise with your time. The Rambam's saying, no, number one, not all of this is so simple to everyone. And really, some of it requires great introduction, requires a lot of explanation. And he brings a proof to this. For Amruzal, the rabbis have already said, if someone wants to be saintly, let him practice the teachings of Perkei Avot. If you want to be a chassid, and of course chassid in this context doesn't mean somebody with a long beard or long sideburns who dances a jig. A chassid means a truly devout and pious person. And if you want to do that, says the Rambam, you must study this tractate. This is the tractate which brings a person to piety, to true piety. Piety brings a person to the holy inspiration. This is a quote from the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, as you see there in the translation. That by performing the ethics described in this tractate, you can come to a level of prophecy. And the Rambam will describe, as we read, what prophecy is and what one needs to do to reach a level of prophecy. And that to be a prophet isn't just about some sort of divine inspiration from on high. It's not that just God just inspires you. But to be a prophet, you need to be an ethical person. You need to perfect your character traits. He's going to explain to you why that is, why it is it's true that in order to reach prophecy, you need to study and implement the teachings in Pirkei Avot. And he says, before I get to actually telling you what I think is the explanation to this tractate, there are a number of principles that I need to introduce it with. And there'll be a key for you, a guide to explaining what it is I'm going to teach you when you study this tractate. So the Rambam is telling you, number one, Pirkei Avot is extremely important. It's not, you know, classically, you might think Pirkei Avot is for sort of people who aren't ready to learn. It's for people who aren't trained well. Pirkei Avot is what you learn with someone who's just a beginner. And the Rambam's telling you absolutely not. Pirkei Avot, these ethical teachings are a necessary introduction to reaching the highest levels of spirituality. And I think that's worth noting considering what we've said. The Rambam's focus on intellectual accomplishment, intellectual achievements, everything that we learned about in our previous classes. Nevertheless, the Rambam is saying here that to really achieve all of that, you need to be an ethical and moral person. And then the Rambam says something really interesting. Vida, שהדברים שאומרים באלו הפרקים, ובמה שיבי מן הפרש אינם עניינים בדעת מני מעצמי. Rambam says, listen, what I'm going to tell you in this explanation of Pirkei Avot, I didn't make it up. These are not my ideas. I'm getting them from elsewhere. Lo pirushim shechadashim. These are not explanations that I made up. V'anam hem inyanim, they are ideas. Likate midivrei hachachamim midrashot. I got them from the sages in their sermons, in the Agadah, in the Midrash, uve Talmud, and in the Gemara, v'zulato mechaburehem, and in other works, umedivrei hafilosofim gankin, hakdumim v'chadashim, and also from the philosophers, both the ancient and the new. And something that's really interesting about the Rambam and his commentary on the Pirkei Avot, he quotes from philosophy, he quotes from Aristotle, he quotes from other philosophical works that are outside the traditional Jewish canon, non-traditional works. And here the Rambam says something that I think is very controversial. And he says, Vishama ha'emet mimisha amri. Listen, the Rambam says, you know what? You could tell me, Rabbi, what are you doing quoting all of these philosophers? This is Mishnah. Aren't we Jewish? We're supposed to be learning Jewish sources. Rambam says, listen to the truth from whoever says it. Regardless of whether or not the speaker is a philosopher or a sage in the Talmud, the truth is the truth. And we must heed the truth from whoever speaks it. And here, and then it gets even more interesting. The Efshar Shavi Pamim Mamar Echa Kulo Misefer Mufursam Bolshonah. I may even quote an entire book or a selection from a book verbatim. The Ein B'chol Zeroa. And it's not evil to do that. What would you call quoting an entire book verbatim? Anyone have another word for that? When you quote someone else's work verbatim, what might you call that?
Plagiarism,
right? It's a little controversial.
Copyright infringement. Hire a lawyer.
Well, it's only with this no attribution.
Okay, no attribution, Dahi, right? So it would be okay if he actually quotes.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
It has to be the quote, the author, right? It has to be. Actually not. The Inbachol Zerah, he says. It's not so bad. Why? It's not evil. It's okay. The Inim Spar B'Masha Amr Misha Kadam. I'm not claiming that it's mine. I'm telling you right now, none of this is my own. Shani Fars Vaati B'Zeh. I'm already admitting it right now. This is not my wisdom. The Afa Pli Shalo Eskar Amar Ploni. Even though, says the Rambam, I am not going to tell you. So said this author. I'm not going to quote them. Why? Shazeh arichot ein toelet bo. Being lengthy and explaining where each statement's from, that's just long-winded verbiage. There's no gain to that. That's number one. Ve'efshar sheyihaya mevi shema isha hu lachshov mi she'en chich lo shadar unifsad. If I would quote the statement and tell you who said it, some people may disregard it. Some people who he says, they have no taste. Some people, if I quote you my sources, are going to disregard it. And I don't want that. I don't want people to disregard the wisdom because of its source. So I'm just not going to tell you where it's from. Not going to tell you. They're just not going to understand it. They're just going to disregard it. Therefore, I saw not to mention the person who said it at all. My purpose in writing this is for the reader to understand the hidden concepts in this tractate. That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to teach you the ideas. And if mentioning the author is going to mean that you're going to disregard them, it's not worth it. The Rambam says, not going to tell you who wrote it. And now, says the Rambam, I have arranged for you these 8 chapters, which I think are essential to understanding the concepts in Pirkei Avot. So let's hop here for a second. I'm going to imagine that many of you are sort of bothered by the Rambam's choice here to not quote the author. It is certainly quite controversial, not just because of our modern standards of plagiarism and attributing things to their author, which I don't know if they those existed at the time the Rambam was alive and how many people were always quoting from others, but also because of Jewish tradition, right? Because what does Jewish tradition say about quoting the author or the originator of a statement? Do we have any ideas about quoting someone when you, in Judaism, just Jewish sources, when you quote them? When you
you're supposed to say B'Shem Omro. B'Shem Omro.
Exactly. B'Shem Omro. And the Rambam knows this. The Rambam knows, I don't mean to pin myself. The Rambam knows that's true, obviously. So I think the explanation for this is the Rambam's being a little bit cryptic about what percentage of his sources are really from the Talmud and Midrashim and what percentage are not. And it seems to me that the reason he did this, and the Rambam does this often, but it seems to me that part of the reason he does this in this tractate is because he's very fearful that you're going to disregard a lot of what he thinks is essential because of where he's quoting it from. Now, we can go back and forth about whether that's a wise decision or not. Rambam often got flack for not quoting his sources for many reasons. But be that as it may, that's what the Rambam says, and I think it does attest to the nature of this work. Okay, so now we begin chapter one of these eight chapters which introduce Pirkei Avot. This chapter, on the one hand, may seem a little bit ancient to us. The Rambam here is going to utilize what you may call the science or biology of his day. He's going to discuss the makeup of sort of human consciousness and the human senses and all the faculties that make up a human. I don't want to focus on critiquing the Rambam's science here, but I do want to read it because it's important in terms of the Rambam's understanding of the way humans function. And I think there's a very profound point the Rambam is teaching here. Does anybody want to continue reading, by the way? You can read in English, Hebrew. It's either way. I would love if someone wants to volunteer, although I'm happy to read as well. Any volunteers to continue reading? Yeah? I'll begin and maybe someone will jump in later. Here we go. Dasha nefesh adam nefesh achat. First says the Rambam, we have one soul. As human organisms, we have one soul, one force that ultimately is responsible for everything that we do. V'yeshla pulo rabo chalukot, and that soul has many diversified activities. And some of these activities have been called souls in themselves. The Rambam here is dispelling a notion that many had in his day, which was that people had different souls. And you may have heard this notion before. There's nefesh chiyunit. There's a certain soul which is sort of necessary for the basic functioning of a human. There's nefesh tamidaberet, the soul that's necessary for speech. And there are those who believe that humans were made up of more than one soul. The Rambam here is saying it's not so. Humans all have one soul. And it's worth considering what the Rambam thinks is the soul. You know, we often talk of the soul, and what do we think of it as? Some sort of metaphysical, sort of mysterious entity that we can't really grasp. The Rambam has a very different understanding of what the soul is. And what we'll see in this chapter is for the Rambam, the soul is very much connected with our everyday activity, that we access it all the time. Right? And they think because of this, like some physicians apparently thought, that people have many souls. And so much so that one of the most prominent doctors wrote in the beginning of his book that there are three different types of souls. Tevit chuyanit nafshet. There is the natural soul, the soul responsible for our life force, and then there is the spiritual soul. Sometimes the soul is divided into parts. V'zeh Hashem yasu ha-philosophim harbe pamim ve'inam rotsim ba'om chelke shehi mechaleke kechelak ha-gufot. Aval him mornim mefulot ha-chalukob che mechol ha-nefesh ha-chalakim mechol ha-mechubar me'ha-chalakim ma'him. The point the Rambam is making here is that while in his time people describe humans as being comprised of many souls or many parts of the soul, it's not true. There's one soul. Humans all have one soul. That soul expresses itself through many different things that humans do. Let me ask you a question. Why do you think the Rambam thinks this is so important? Why is it so important to the Rambam that it's clear to us that humans are comprised of one soul and not many different souls that are all in one body or many different parts of a soul? Why do you think that is? What's so important about the fact that there's only one soul in the body?
Because God is the source of the soul.
Okay, God is the source of the soul. What if God gave us two souls? Would that, like, what if a person has a misconception? I think one soul is responsible for my functioning, like breathing and eating, you know? And then there's another soul that's responsible for thinking. Why would that be a problem? Or why might that be? Why is the problem with a person that's
because that soul they could be in conflict with one another.
They could be in conflict with one another. What else?
It sounds like one God versus many gods.
Okay. I think it's a theological problem. Two souls might mean two gods. Fair. I'm going for very basic here. Let me ask you a question. Say a person doesn't eat right. I don't know. Person is, we read about this, read the Rambam together. The Rambam, as we'll see again, is not so happy with maybe some of our activities and appetites over Hanukkah. I don't know, the Rambam was a big Hanukkah person as we read together, but I'm not sure the Rambam would be happy with sufganiyot or vola potato lakas or, you know, in the show we had, we just served yesterday, four different varieties of donuts. The Rambam is very strict about the things that a person should have in their diet. He says, do not eat things that are sweet for you. Don't eat things that taste good if they're not good for you. Rambam was very adamant about this. What if a person went to the Rambam and said, oh, Rambam, I don't understand. I'm going to enjoy myself and I'm going to have the sufganiyot and everything. And I'll still be a good person. I'll still be a good person. What's to stop me from being a good person if I have a nice appetite for some yummy treats?
You may die early.
May die early. Okay, fair. It's always,
come on.
You don't want an imposter song to die early. But I want to give you a fundamental answer.
You're just indulging yourself, and that's not what the purpose of life is.
Good, and that's the Rambam says. All our actions are meant to be geared toward a higher purpose, enjoying ourselves on the purpose of life. But I want even stronger. Yes, Gail.
I think he was a very disciplined person. He's looking for us to be very disciplined and to control ourselves in every way.
100%. And I think what he's stressing here is we're one organism. And your physical activity and your spiritual activity and your emotional activity and everything that you do is connected. And so that's why the Rambam, even in his halachic guide for life, talks about dietary habits. Because while you and I might distinguish between, look, for my diets, I go to a dietitian, and then for, you know, or I go to my physician, and they tell me what I need to eat and not eat. And for spiritual advice, I might go to a rabbi, and I'm not saying that's certainly true. The Rambam would say those are one. It's all one question. Proper living is a comprehensive endeavor. Proper living means eating right, it means acting right, it means learning right, it means studying right. And that's what I think the Rambam here is arguing. We're one soul. We're one soul, the same soul responsible for eating and drinking and all the basic functions of humanity is also responsible for the higher functions of our life. And if you want to achieve the purpose of humanity, if you're here, if you're geared toward the goal of human flourishing and knowledge of God, which for the Rambam is the highest ideal of humanity, then everything needs to be in order. And the Rambam is going to, I think, emphasize this very nicely here. He says, "V'ati Odeya, now you should know. Fixing character traits is a healing of the soul and its activities. Just as a doctor who heals bodies needs to know the different parts of the body that he is healing and what they are and their different elements, Rat Salomar Gufa Adam, meaning the body of a person, but Sarashida Azad Barim Yachaluhu Yishamar Mehem, and a person who is practicing medicine, many of us maybe who are doctors in the audience, and my wife's a doctor, I will say, my father's a doctor, I think he saw on this call. So you know that we have different sorts of doctors. There's pulmonologists, and there's internal medicine. You know, and there's psychiatrists, there's the doctor of the mind, and the doctor of the lungs, there's all sorts of doctors, and they are all they're experts in their type of medicine. They also know the whole human body, because if you want to heal someone, you need to know all the parts of the body and how they all function together. You need to know what makes a person sick. You need to know what heals them. That's all really necessary, clearly. Cain, Rofei HaNefesh, so to someone who wants to heal their soul, and someone who wants to perfect their character traits, that needs to know the soul and its different elements, the way it expresses itself, and what makes it sick. And that, I think, is a very basic point that we may hear not so infrequently, but I think it's one that must be emphasized. For the Rambam, we can have souls that are sick. What that means is, and he'll describe all these different character traits and what it means to have a perfect balance of character traits. But for the Rambam, if a person, for instance, has a bad temper and gets angry frequently, too frequently, it's not just that they're doing something wrong. They're sick. They are not functioning correctly. There is something off about them. Their soul is not functioning the way it was meant to function. If they are losing their temper too frequently, or for that matter, if they're too passive and let people take advantage of them. Because we have one soul, and it's meant to function in a certain way, both physically and spiritually, and in terms of the way that we carry ourselves. And therefore, what the Rambam does now is he takes the soul and tries to sort of divide it into the different ways that it expresses itself. So says the Rambam, "V'nei Omer, therefore I will tell you." And here I think I just might read the English, because again, this is essentially sort of the Rambam's take on the human biology and the composition of humanity. So I want to read through this quickly, but he will refer back to these parts of ourselves. Again, and what the Rambam is saying is, if you want to heal your soul, you need to know the different things that your soul does. There are five portions of the soul. Hazan, v'huanikra hatzomeach. There is the, here it says nutritive, the thing that actually satiates you, like your digestive system. And that's also called the growing faculty, v'harmargish, and what you feel. Hamidame, the imaginative, hamitzorer, and the appetitive, mitzorer in terms of our desires, the things that we want, the hasikli, and the intellectual. These are the five things that the Rambam divides the soul into. Now again, it's one soul which expresses itself in all these ways. And I'm telling you now, this is referring to a human soul. The digestive system of a human is different than the digestive system of a donkey or of a horse. I don't know how well the Rambam knew the digestive system, and did he really know the similarities between a horse's digestive system and a human digestive system and the differences? It's an interesting question, but the Rambam here is saying the humans are singular. right? V'hatamar nizom b'chelek hazam in a nefesh asher la. Even regarding a tamar, which a date, right? Also, a palm tree also has a sort of soul. Now, that just means an appetite of soul, and it's a different than, but the rub, but that's also a living thing. Right? Even though we're describing that animals have an emotional or a feeling component, and animals do too, they're not the same. It doesn't mean to say that it's the same type of faculties that other species have, but they're similar in that they perform similar functions. However, every being has one soul. And this soul needs to carry out certain activities. And other souls carry out other activities. Sometimes different souls carry out similar activities, but they're really different. You have a dark place. The sun might light up one dark place, or the moon, or fire. All of it is doing illuminating. It's all the same activity, but it's a different source. Right? They're not all the same. The source of one source of light is the sun. One source is the moon. One source is the fire. The soul of the donkey is different than the soul of a human, different than the soul of an eagle. And them in the shikatsem shit of a shame vad, the habin zain and shuniflam odi chashuba har baharbe min abisbalsim, yechavi min harkov deo beltiamitio. I think what the Rambam is trying to tell you here is that just because we function in a similar way to other species, i.e. animals, doesn't mean that we are actually common with them. And the Rambam here is trying to tell you humans are unique. I think the reason the Rambam emphasizes this here is because what the Rambam is going to do is put the ball in our court. And the Rambam is going to tell you that it is upon you to control as much of your functioning as you possibly can. And you have the power to do so. And you can control the way that your soul interacts with the world, and you can channel your emotions to feel a certain way, and therefore you're different than the animals that you may see around you. While they seem to have a lack of control, you are not that way. Now the Rambam goes through a number of different functions that each of these five portions of the soul carry out. But I want to go through this a little more quickly. Maybe I'll just read the English, because at this point I think this is a little less substantial for our purposes. She writes here, returning to our subject, the faculties of the soul, let me say that the nutritive faculty consists of the power of a trace attracting nourishment to the body, retention of the nourishment, right? Digesting it, the repulsion of superfluities, right? Excreting what we don't need, growth and procreation, and the differentiation, the nutritive juices that are necessary for sustenance from those which are to be expelled. These are basic functions that you need to survive. The detailed discussion of these seven faculties, the means by which and how they perform their functions, which members of the body, their operations are most visible and perceptible, meaning all the ways that your body functions. I'm not here to tell you that, says the Rambam. That's not what I'm discussing, but that is one part of your function. That is what he calls nutritive faculty, chelek hazan. Number two, there's the margish. The faculty of sensation consists of the five well-known senses: seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and feeling. Apparently, the Rambam knew the same five senses we know of today. The last of which is found over the whole surface of the body, not being confined to any special member, as are the other four faculties. Right? These are all very basic. Your nose can smell, your eyes can see, your ear can hear, your mouth can taste. But if I hit you in your face, or I hit you in your elbow, or I hit you in your stomach, or I hit you in your back, you're going to feel it regardless of where that is, right? all very basic. That's the sense of feeling. Feeling here doesn't mean emotions, it means sensation. Here it gets a little more interesting. The imagination is that faculty which retains impressions of things perceptible to the mind after they have ceased to affect directly the senses which conceive them. This is a really interesting way of looking at the imagination. The Rambam says here, the imagination is sort of how you feel things after you aren't in contact with them physically, right? So that I might touch the table in front of me, now I can feel it, that's the second portion of the soul. The third portion of the soul is thinking in my mind what it feels like to touch a table, even though I'm not actually touching the table. This faculty combining some of these impressions and separating others from one another thus constructs out of originally perceived ideas, some of which has never received any impression. Based on the sensations of smell, hearing, and touch, my imagination can even conceive of concepts I never encountered, right? So he gives an example here. You can imagine an animal with 1,000 eyes, or even crazier, you can imagine a boat that can fly. Could you imagine such a thing? A boat that could fly, says the Rambam, an iron ship floating in the air? Crazy to think about. That's what the Rambam is writing about in the 1200s. Obviously, that is now a reality. The Rambam says, even though such things don't exist, but you can conceive of such things. Why? The imagination allows you to take certain things that you feel and put them together in ways that you haven't perceived. You know what flying is. You know what a boat is. You can imagine a flying boat. Here's what's interesting about this notion of the imagination for the Rambam. You notice that there are five different sections of the soul. And you also notice that we're sort of going up. Each one is sort of more elevated than the other, right? So that the most basic eating and digesting and all that dirty stuff, right? Don't need to go into all the detail there. That's sort of very basic human functioning. And although the Rambam's contrasting our functioning with that of the animals, but it's pretty not unconscious. You don't really control too much of that. And then the second thing is feeling. Feeling's very physical. Imagination is not so high on the Rambam's sort of spectrum here, is it? Imagination is 3. For the Rambam, the imaginative faculty is the least important intellectual faculty. The imagination for the Rambam is sort of closer to those other sensations of feeling and touching. You don't want to let your imagination run wild. And he says, based on this, there's a certain school of thought that based on their misconception of what the imagination is, thought that if you can imagine something, then it must exist. If I can imagine an animal with 1,000 eyes, well, how can that thing appear in my mind? It must be that there must be somewhere an animal with 1,000 eyes. The Rambam says that's crazy because your imagination you don't perceive the truth with your imagination. You do not come to truth through imagining things. You come to truth with the higher faculties. And the imagination is simply an extension of the things that you feel. Okay, moving on to the fourth section for the Rambam. I know this is a bit elementary and doesn't seem so essential, but it's important for the continuation here. So that's why we're going through it, albeit a little quickly. The fourth section is the appetites, our desires, the things that we want. This is more the emotional part of a human. What drives us? What gives us desire? The appetite is that faculty by which a man desires or loathes a thing, and from which there arise the following activities. The pursuit of an object or a flight from it, the things that you want or don't want. Inclination, avoidance, anger and affection, fear, courage, cruelty and compassion, love and hate, and many other similar psychic qualities. All parts of the body are subservient to these activities, as the ability of the hand to grasp, that of the foot to walk, that of the eye to see, and that of the heart to make one bold or timid. Right? So similarly, the other members of the body, whether external or internal, are instruments of the appetitive faculty. You're hungry, and you have a reaction physiologically. You want something, and that has certain physiological reactions. But the Rambam sees this as a downward flow. It's starting from the feeling, it flows downward into the lower parts of the soul, the imaginative, and then, you know, the appetite, right? So that by, if I'm hungry, I might imagine something, you know, maybe you're hungry right now, you might imagine a nice, you know, piece of steak, and that's going to cause a certain physiological reaction. And then finally, the highest faculty, of course, for the Rambam is going to be the intellectual, reason. The highest faculty of humanity is sichli. The intellectual reason, the intellectual part of a person, is the ability by which a person can come to reflect. Through it, he can acquire knowledge. And I think those are two important statements here. What is included in wisdom? What sorts of things comprise what we call wisdom? If you ask someone on the street, what makes you a wise person? They might answer you, well, you might have to know a lot of facts. Maybe you know a lot of history. You know science very well. You've acquired a lot of information. You can solve a very complicated math problem in a few moments. Maybe it means you're very good at computers and you can sort of, if there's a virus, it takes you just a few seconds to figure out what's going on. That's part of it, says the Rambam. But what else, look what else he says here. Uvo yavdil ben hameguna v'hana'em na'pulot. Through wisdom, a person distinguishes between that which is disgusting or immoral and that which is noble. Wisdom also means knowing and being able to discern immoral from moral behavior. That is also wise, to know that which is moral. Ve'ela pulo mehen ma'asi mehen yuni. And the ways in this, the highest faculty of humanity expresses itself, some are practical, some are intellectual. Ha'ma'asi mehenu melech et machshevet, mehenu machshevi. Right? So one speculative power is in terms of applying sciences, knowing how to create things, knowing how to put things together and break them apart to create different implements and utensils. That's all a function of the highest part of humanity.
But you need, don't you need imagination for that? Don't you need imagination for that?
It's interesting, right? I don't, for the Rambam doesn't see that. The Rambam thinks that you come to do that through sort of, now I think maybe your point is that imagination might enable you to, you're making a great point here. You're saying in order to solve a problem, you might need to think of something you haven't come into contact with.
Well, so you know, I think without imagination, we wouldn't have had E = mc².
It's a fair point. I think the Rambam is defining imagination as sort of, you know, thinking about those things that you're no longer in contact with. But it's an interesting point you're making here. I don't know if the Rambam sees it that way. The Rambam sees it as reason. Reason is how you solve problems. He gives you an example here. That's how you learn to do work, like carpentry and agriculture and medicine and sailing. To intellectual power, that you can make a decision if it's the right time to do something or not the right time to do something. And if it is possible, how are you going to do it? And that's all I'm going to tell you right now regarding the soul. And here's the conclusion here. Here's the Rambam tells you about the hierarchy. This soul comprised of all these different forces and sections. It is the material, v'haseichel ha'tzura, and reason is the form. The fact that we have these faculties doesn't mean we're complete. The seichel, reason, is the matter, is the form. These faculties are intended to produce a certain type of person. If a person doesn't acquire secha, if a person doesn't acquire reason, defined by the Rambam both as intellectual knowledge, knowing how things are, knowing the truth, and knowing how to act morally, if a person fails to acquire that, then they are like a machine which has all the necessary parts but can't function. To give an example, if you had a car which has wheels and an engine and all the different parts of a car, but it can't drive, then what use is the car? What the Rambam is saying here is that if you have a person with all the hardware and all the software and all the faculties, but you don't acquire seichel, you are like raw material that doesn't accomplish its purpose, its ultimate goal, the ultimate goal of reason. And that he quotes in Pasuk and Mishlei to this end. But Ratzalomar, Shemitziyah ha-nefesh shelo tagia elaha ha-tsura, avaltiyah nefesh lo dat lo to. If a person has this soul and all the different capabilities of the soul, but he doesn't accomplish the tsura, the form of humanity, the form of the human who is the person with, the being with intellectual reason, then they become a soul without knowledge, which is not good. A quote from Proverbs, right, from Mishlei. He says how exactly that works and what is the form, what is matter. I'm not going to elaborate on that, but just know that there is a tsura. The tsura means it's like what separates an assortment of metal and all the different parts from a car. The car is what it's supposed to be. The metal, you wouldn't describe a car as, what is that over there? Oh, it's a steering wheel and an engine and a door and a hood and a windshield. No, it's a car. In the same way, a human means someone who uses all of these faculties appropriately. And you're not fully human in actuality if you don't do that. That is the Rambam's contention here. I think it is, that does heavily borrow from Aristotelian way of thought, but that part of our functioning as humans means to utilize these forces appropriately.
What about pure experimentation, pure speculation?
Yeah,
not based on any reason, not based on any knowledge, not based on any mechanics, not based on any smell or sight, but absolute pure speculation. The physicist who has absolutely no idea where they're going. But they're right. Going somewhere. What about I might have missed it, but I don't see that anywhere.
He's not saying it here, you're saying. It's a good question. You wonder, if you go over what he says here, let's see. He talks about Uvo Yeha Histak Lut. So to understand, I imagine that the Rambam understands that you can't, you're not going to know everything from begin with. Experimentation, I imagine, would be part of, I think this is similar to what Martin was asking before. You're making a good point, Paul, which is that you can't acquire any knowledge without experimenting what you don't know first. I imagine the Rambam would agree with that. Maybe that's included here in this line about histaklut. Histakel means to look, to discern. I don't know if it was always based on, clear knowledge. It might be based on experimentation or seeing what happens. So I would imagine that would be part of the process of acquiring knowledge. I think that's a good point. I think that's fair. I think when the Rambam is talking about imagination, he means something like, thinking about what it would be to have an animal with 1,000 eyes, where you're simply, I've seen an animal, I've seen eyes, and I'm imagining an animal with 1,000 eyes. I don't think he means in terms of, I have this problem in front of me, let me think of how I might solve it. That sort of imagination, I don't think is what he's referring to. But I do think it's a good point.
Where would space exploration be involved?
I would imagine. It's a good question. He doesn't really elaborate too much here, but I would imagine it would be in this fifth category, right? I would imagine. But he'll tell you how you should spend your time. And I don't know if we're all going to agree with it, but he'll get to that. Don't you worry. Okay, chapter 2. So that was all really introductory. I think it was good to read because it's really more important for what follows. Da, shehaveru v'hamitzvot ha-toriyot anam yintzu b'shneach halakim echalkei nefesh. This is why the Rambam just elaborated upon different ways that the soul functions. Aveiro, transgressions, sins, and mitzvot, positive commandments from the Torah, they all take place within two of these sections. the actions that we can do and not do are part of two of these functions. Chelek hamargish v'chelek hamitzorer. Interesting. They place within the sensitive, the things that we touch and feel with our hands and our eyes and our mouths and noses, and the things that we desire. Uvishnei elu achalakim you call ha'averov ha'mitzvot. Rambam says all of mitzvot relate to these two faculties, the things that we feel and the things that we want or don't want. A fascinating idea. Because I, especially based on the Rambam, might have thought that many mitzvot relate to the seichel, the sichli, the intellectual capacity. What about things like emunah, belief, or, things like don't be, not being jealous might be related to the midameh. It seems here the Rambam saying that mitzvot have to do with the thing, our desires, and the things that we touch and feel, that we do physically. All sins are mitzvot, relate to these two ideas. Regarding the appetitive and regarding the imaginative, there are no transgressions or sins. He says here something interesting, which I think, again, tells you about what he means by imaginative. That we have no control over them. The knowledge and choice doesn't have jurisdiction over the expressions of our nutritive and imaginative faculties. You can't stop them from doing anything. The nutritive and imaginative faculty. Yasu beit ha'shena. They perform when you're sleeping. When you're sleeping, you imagine things, you dream about things. When you're sleeping,
Hear her is not a problem, right?
It sounds like what he's saying is that sort of the imagination, it really is very interesting. This, I think to me, this is a bit comforting in a sense. The Rambam's saying there are certain things that you have no control over. The thoughts that you might have when you're sleeping that you may regret, they're just the imagination. The Rambam's arguing here. To the extent that you can't control them, you can't control them. The zun, the things that happen in our unconscious, the things that, it doesn't mean that obviously you can eat things, but once you put the thing in your body, it sort of digests it without your contribution.
But what about the mitzvah of fasting?
Fasting. So that's a good question, right? So I think what he's saying is that you choose whether or not you're going to touch the food and put it in your mouth. So if you take the thing and put it in your mouth, that's the chilek, what he calls ha-hergesh. That's feeling, because you touched it. Once it's in your mouth, it's kind of too late, right? Like, it's not much you can do about it. But he's just saying those two parts of the human functioning, right? That's not, you're not going to be liable for the fact that you digested it. You're going to be liable for the fact that you picked it up with your hand and put it in your mouth. I think that's a pretty straightforward point. But I think but there are certain things that you can't control. And that's not a mitzvah. It can't be a mitzvah if you can't control it. That's the Rambam saying. If it's something that you have no power over, you can't be instructed not to do it. And therefore, everything that we are constructed to do, we do have control over. And as proof, again, the Rambam didn't have the science we have today to study what happens in a person's brain when they're sleeping. But the Rambam proves that these two parts of humanity are not in our control from the fact they function while we're sleeping, when we have no control over what we do. He says, it's a bit unclear, the mind, what you can control, your intellectually. Rambam says, there is a bit of a dispute in philosophy as to whether or not a person can ultimately have complete control over what they deem to be true. But I argue, says the Rambam, that we do have control. And there are commandments and sins sort of retracting, in a certain sense, what he said before, that there are purely intellectual sins and commandments. Meaning there are certain things you need to believe because they're true, and certain things that you are not allowed to believe because they're false. And the Rambam is saying whether or not you arrive at a true or false conclusion is in your power. But there's no action to do such that we can call it a specific commandment or sin. The reason that I said that only regarding the things that we feel and desire, feel physically and desire emotionally, those are the realms in which there are sins and commandments are, says the Rambam, because regarding the intellect, although there are certain things that are true that we must arrive at and believe, and certain things we don't, there's no action that you can do specifically to arrive at those conclusions. This is a bit controversial, I would say, because the Rambam himself says there's a mitzvah to believe in God. Right? That's the first mitzvah the Rambam believes. But here's what's interesting. When the Rambam talks about certain intellectual mitzvot, you know what he always does? He tells you what you need to do to arrive at them. So for instance, when the Rambam talks about the transgression against jealousy, thou shalt not covet, the form of what that means is you can't covet something to the degree that you take action to acquire it. So while simply seeing Paul's watch and saying, I want that watch, might be what we normally define as coveting something, it is not until I actually bother Paul and say, hey, Paul, can I have your watch? I'd like your watch, Paul. You're willing to sell it to me? It's only when I take action upon that desire that there's a specific mitzvah. Even regarding the mitzvah belief in God, the Rambam says, this is how you come to belief in God. And it gives you an intellectual argument that you need to sort of follow to come to that belief, which is interesting. So, but the Rambam therefore says, regarding the reason that he outlined these five ways that the human mind or human soul functions is because he's saying that mitzvah and avera, the things that we have to be mindful to do and not to do, are only relevant to certain aspects of the soul. Only those of the physical aspect, the things that we touch, taste, smell, feel, and those things that we desire or don't, that we want, what we choose to pursue and not pursue, as opposed to things like that are not under our control. Okay, so we covered a lot here already. I know it's a lot to say, but I think the overall impression you get from the Rambam is of two things that I want to just highlight as we end here. I know it's a lot, and it's sort of very philosophical and theoretical. We'll get some more practical as we go on in terms of what the attributes we should have and should not have. And, you know, he'll talk about things like not being too angry, but not being too passive, and not being too much of a pursuer of physical activity or physical pleasure, but also not withdrawing from the world completely. But I think what the Rambam outlines here is twofold. Number one, we are one human organism. And that human organism expresses itself in many different ways, in things that we eat, things that we control and don't control. But the Rambam is giving us is agency. And the Rambam is saying, those things which you can control, those are the areas which you have to control in order to arrive at the goal of human flourishing. It is only those areas in which we can be commanded to do or not to do. If we are commanded to do something, it means that it is our control. And since it is in our control, we have to build the sorts of character traits and habits which will enable us to make those appropriate decisions. Anyways, I want to thank you all for joining, and we'll continue with this discussion during our next class. Thanks, everyone. I'm happy to stay for a few moments for questions.
Shukla, thank you very much, Rabbi.